Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici, and you're back in school. For the next hour, you certainly are, because I just have to respond to public demand. Fukushima. Everybody's asking about Fukushima. Recent blurbs to the press got everybody scared. I don't think you should be, not in the least, not if you get educated. And that's the theme of the show, as always. Radiation. I think if you understand what it means, you don't have a lot to be concerned about, because in the context of the word radiation, oxidative stress, DNA decay, radioactive elements, in the full span of it, on the globe, Fukushima amounts to next to nothing. And this is what you got to keep in mind. It's in a sense a misdirection to point to specific incidences as really something to be afraid of. And that includes Chernobyl. That includes nuclear emission. That includes any acute newsworthy event. Usually, if you analyze it, reduces itself to not too much. The mistake that's made is that we don't respect bioaccumulation. In other words, the totality of all the free radical damage to the cell is really what we ought to be concerned about. And in that context, Fukushima is just one small particle that we're adding to the big picture. Now, I'm going to get a lot more specific about this, but we've got to go back to school so we can add this up and really get it into perspective. So the first thing we're going to do, and again, as always, get to the website, straighttalk.cc. That's not .com, that's two T's, straighttalk.cc. Get to that website, because you got to do this by the pictures. It'll go so much smoother. And as always, if you can't, I'll describe it as best I can. So here we go. We're back to school. The atom, the molecule, the compound, basic seventh grade science. Let's get to the atom. An atom is like a grape or a peach. And on the outer level of that atom are a bunch of electrons, negatively charged entities that we call electrons, that we give a charge called minus one to, spinning around a nucleus. And in that nucleus, which is where the peach pits are, which is where the seeds of the grape live, in that peach pit, we have a center, and in that center, we have protons and neutrons. Those protons have a charge, plus one. The neutrons don't have a charge. But the neutrons have a weight, and the protons have a weight. So the center of an atom gives it its atomic mass. That mass is the meat. It's the power, so to speak, of the atom. When you have a radioactive atom, like uranium, like radium, like cesium, like strontium, we have elements out there, most of which, and this is the key to understand, what I'm talking about today in terms of don't be concerned about Fukushima is, if you just make simple inquiry into the reality, simple inquiry into the reality of where we get most of our radioactive elements. They're coming from nature itself. Most of the place we get our radioactive elements is from radon. 55% of our exposure throughout the world is through radon gas. Radon gas causes more cancer than Fukushima and a million Fukushimas will ever cause. Radon gas causes more cancer than any amount of nuclear war will cause. Radon gas causes more cancer than any MRI, than any CT scan. Any of your concerns about radiation damage from anything, from that CT scan, from that X-ray, from that cell phone, is completely and totally obliterated by the fact that most of our cancers are derived in terms of radiation from radon gas. Now you can readily pull that statistic. And I put it on the website. So if you go to picture number 11 on the website, they're going to clearly tell you that the sources of radiation exposure in the United States accounting for more cancer than anything come from natural radiation. You get natural radiation out of a banana. There are foods that will naturally give you radiation damage. And that radiation damage can be just as lethal as anything. Classically, we understand that in terms of radiation, radon gas. Now, that atom with its protons and its neutrons is normally a stable atom, meaning that our bodies are made of atoms. Those atoms are stuck together to make molecules. Those molecules make compounds. Those compounds make cells, and those cells make organs, and those organs make you. But some of those atoms and their ratio of protons to neutrons are not stable, meaning they're exploding, meaning you have protons breaking off and being emitted. You have protons and neutrons breaking off and being emitted. And collectively, when we have an atom like cesium, like strontium, like uranium, like gallium, like palladium, or when we make an isotope of an element like iodine-131, radioactive iodine, when we cite any one of these atoms that are unstable, it means that if they get into your system, if they hit you from the outside, if you drink them through water, if you eat them in food, they're going to go into your body. And because they're exploding, because they're unstable, whether it's alpha radiation, beta radiation, gamma radiation, ionizing radiation, whether or not these things are stable and how unstable they are determines in part how dangerous they are to your tissues, because when they hit the cell, they will chip off pieces of the cell. Now, you have to understand that most of what we call radiation can be understood in terms of a spectrum. And I put that spectrum on the website, a wide electromagnetic spectrum, meaning on one end of these waves of radiation that are highly dangerous, we have gamma rays. So when a nuclear bomb goes off, you have an entire wave of gamma rays. Gamma rays have a very high frequency. And any high frequency, meaning these waves have a very long distance if they're radio waves. So if you were to draw a wave, and if you get on the website, you'll see pictures of the wave. That wide, long wave can be shortened into very tiny waves. And when you have tiny waves, it creates high frequencies. High frequency is X-ray. High frequency is gamma ray. When you get a CT scan or you get an X-ray, those rays are very destructive to the cell because they have very high frequencies. When an atom bomb goes off, when someone's exposed to gamma radiation is what emits when Fukushima went off. Strontium 90, cesium 137 emit gamma ray. Those rays, because they have very high frequencies, pulverize through the body. They go straight through the membrane of the cell, and they can hit the DNA. There's no way the cell has evolved to protect itself from that. When you have an infection, when you have even a chemical come into the body's got a variety of ways to stop the entry of that chemical, of that infective element into the cell. But when you talk about a radiation particle, when you talk about a radiation wave, a high-frequency wave, the body hasn't really evolved mechanisms to protect itself from that. So the DNA is like a sitting duck for these types of attacks on the cell. Now, there's lots the cell can do to repair itself, but the fact is the cell cannot protect itself initially from the first onslaught. So when we talk about Fukushima and we say a reactor melted down, we're looking at cesium-137, which is what? If you check the website, I've got in picture number 4, the periodic table of elements. Periodic table of elements are all the known elements. So any compound, any threat, anything chemical that you're talking about is composed of a wide variety of elements. On the bottom there, if you check that picture, you're going to see something that says CE. Right on the bottom, lower level. CE, a molecular weight of 58. Then you're going to find strontium on that page also. That's got a different molecular weight. But collectively, they compose, whether it's cesium or strontium, collectively they compose what went into the ocean when Fukushima melted down. So you have two atoms, cesium and strontium. Those atoms are called radioactive. That means their protons and neutrons in the center of the cell are exploding. They explode at a certain rate. That rate of explosion has a lot to do with how dangerous they are to the body. In other words, the speed at which they decay in the body will bombard whatever they hit with all these emitting entities from alpha particles, beta particles, gamma rays, as the atom decomposes. Now, if you ingest that into your body, well, obviously, that decomposition is going to pulverize your cells, and this is the threat. So we have these two unstable isotopes that occur in nature that derive themselves from the breakdown of uranium, and they're emitted into the ocean. And the scare is that once the fish eat them, and once the seafood imbibes these radioactive elements, they're going to work their way up the food chain and into the human body. Now, the guys that crunch the numbers are the scientists. And if you hit the literature, and I'm going to quote a scientist now that's all over the paper from the State University of Stony Brook. I don't know if you're familiar with Stony Brook. Stony Brook is out in the East Coast. Stony Brook was put up in the 60s. It was planned on ending up more or less as the Berkeley of the East Coast, and I think it's done a very reputable job. It draws, I believe, more Nobel Prize-winning scientists than any school in the United States outside of Harvard. And there's a guy, his name is Nicholas Fisher, and he's a biogeochemist. And he's studying the fish populations, and they're measuring. And they're measuring from last year to this year. And his work, he's part of a larger consortium of scientists. And his work is declaring very, very definitively that even the levels of cesium-37 and strontium-90 in bluefin tuna post-Fukushima – are not even close, not even close to what the EPA would consider dangerous. Not even close. So the Environmental Protection Agency sets its norms to protect you, the consumer, from imbibing foods with all sorts of things like radioactive elements in the name of protecting your health, even if the EPA is off, even if it's liberal, even if it's crooked or bought. There are hordes of scientists out now stating that we're not even close in our second year since Fukushima. We're not even close to approaching anything but insignificant levels. Even if Fisher's wrong, even if the mainstream geochemists, biochemists are not particularly alarmed, you have to consider the common sense angle here. And that common sense angle, I list in picture number 10. That really, number one, in the full span of cancer, we clearly estimate that radiation accounts for less than 1% of cancers. Now, there's other things to be concerned about yet. Yes, but let's just take cancer to begin with. So again, less than 1% of our cancers are radiation derived. Now, within that radiation, a good 55%, more than half of our radiation, comes from the earth itself. I've got a map on the website, and that map is where throughout the United States we have alarming amounts of radon gas, which is a radioactive gas that derives itself from uranium. So houses built, first of all, uranium, which has a 4 billion year half-life. That uranium is naturally occurring throughout the entire world. It's built into the soil. Uranium lives there. Unstable atoms that are decaying over very long periods of time, emitting radiation, is an earth-wide issue. And uranium will break down to radium, R-A-D-I-U-M. What these radioactive atoms do is break apart, and they make different atoms. So uranium breaks down to radium, which is another radioactive particle. And radium emits a gas. Its conversion goes gaseous. And homes are built on these radon plots. Now, this is going on throughout the United States. And our EPA... So now our Environmental Protection Agency, that which the government puts there to protect us, which we all fear would be liberal. We would all fear would be conservative, meaning it would allow higher levels to reach the public than really the public should be exposed to. So even with a conservative estimate, if you check page 16 out on the website, there's the EPA mapping out the United States and showing areas where they find great concern. Areas in the United States, states, the whole Midwest, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois. There's so many states already in the United States that are on radon beds. Houses built on properties where the long-term effect of uranium decay has produced radon gas. And radon gas is lethal. And it's being emitted at a frequency, at a concentration that even the Environmental Protection Agency is concerned about. If you want to get nervous about something in the area of radiation, get nervous about that. In other words, this is less an issue in California, but if you check that map out, it includes a good one-third of the United States. Pockets of Southern California emit high levels of radon gas. And you can have this measured, but you don't, because you don't hear about that. That's a threat. Systemically, throughout the United States, that's a threat. Having a home built on a soil that's effectively contaminated with radon is a real threat. That single threat against the threat of what we've already delineated as not even close to EPA standards is where we should shift our minds off Fukushima. And in the big picture, it's about bioaccumulation. We're going to get to that, meaning the rate at which the body can remove the totality of radiation. And there's lots of ways the body can do that if you elect to do it. But first, let's get straight on a little more in depth on what we mean by radiation. In the full spectrum of rays that pass through the air, from radio waves all the way to CT scans and X-rays and gamma rays, in the full span of that, we have two considerations: the wavelength, which is clearly pictured on that page, and the frequency. On one extreme, you have gamma and X-ray. On the other extreme, you have radio waves. So we all kind of understand if you're sitting next to a radio, it's emitting these waves, and you haven't got the slightest concern because those waves, you understand, are not dangerous to you. If you look at the span of that chart, you've got radio waves as, well, we could call them our safest wave. So they're a very long wavelength and very, very low frequency. So the wavelengths are very long, the distances between the wave crests are very long, and because they're very long, the frequency per unit time, the number of those wavelengths that will pass a space, a point in space, is going to be very, very small. Now, as you start to get into the danger zone, the wavelength decreases and the frequency increases. It's like squashing the wave together. So as you approach radio waves, then you start to approach microwaves. That's right, your microwave oven. That's right, your cell phone. If you look at picture number 6, you're going to see the picture of a cell phone. And it's going to say, this is its approximate wavelength, and this is its approximate frequency. All the way up to ultraviolet light, we consider these waves, from the radio wave to the cell phone wave to the microwave to the infrared wave of the sun to visible light, we call these waves non-ionizing. So we're going to introduce another important word there, and you can see it at the bottom of that picture, non-ionizing. Non-ionizing represents a wave where the frequency is not so dangerous that when it hits a molecule in the human body, it doesn't chip off an electron. It can't knock an electron out of a system or a cell or a component part of a cell. Knocking off an electron, so this is an important point to understand. When you knock an electron off a stable molecule, so when the protons and the neutrons are sitting in the nucleus and the electrons are spinning as they're supposed to be in union with another cloud of electrons from a nearby atom, and the body's got its chemical integrity, when something hits it from the outside to knock an electron off, like a gamma ray or an X-ray or an alpha ray or a beta ray, something from a radioactive piece of uranium or strontium or cesium, when something hits it from the outside that knocks an electron out, we call that ionizing radiation. So you can put radiation into two categories, ionizing and non-ionizing. Non-ionizing is thought to be less dangerous. Now, yes, there's a lot about cell phones. There's a lot about microwaves. Whole other discussion. But right now, for the sake of argument, just understand that radio waves, well, I should say microwaves, cell phone waves, mean nothing. They're negligible next to X-rays and gamma rays. The net effect of a radioactive atom like cesium or strontium that break off and emit these particles that come into the body, those attacks are way more serious than anything out of a microwave or anything out of a cell phone. Of course, you have to consider concentration, meaning the number of hits. You've got to consider exposure. A cell phone to the head 10 hours a day versus the occasional hit of a gamma ray. And yes, the most dangerous rays are hitting our body hundreds of times a day. Most of the radiation you get hit with is from the Earth itself. The Earth emits naturally, in a naturally occurring sense. The Earth is emitting and always has been emitting tons of radiation per day. And human bodies long ago were absorbing that radiation and found ways to protect themselves against that radiation. So you really have to keep this in context before you want to get too concerned over something like Fukushima, like Chernobyl, in the sense, and this is so important, in the sense of the acute event, relax. In the sense that if we put together a world that doesn't recognize that the bioaccumulative effect of these occurrences can start to add up, well, then we've made a mistake. And this is the perspective I want to give you today. Fukushima by itself means nothing. Chernobyl by itself means nothing. Nothing to us if we're not relatively close and we haven't received dangerous levels. But in the context of the totality of 50, 100, 200 years, the combined events of everything added up in a body that doesn't pay attention to all the indices of health, that's a different story. Cancer rates have skyrocketed. I did the show 3-4 weeks ago on cancer. Our rates have skyrocketed over 300 years. Well, again, if there was radiation hundreds and hundreds of years ago and no cancer, then what's changed? Well, that's my point. The totality of our concerns has really changed the scale, which is very different from what the 3 or 4 or 5 people I spoke to this week that were so concerned about Fukushima and these blurbs into the press. You have to understand sensationalism. It usually is just misdirection. While we're so concerned about Fukushima, how about the number of homes in the Midwest that are built on radon emission plots? In other words, you buy your house and spend 20 years on top of a high concentration of uranium in the soil that's decomposed and is producing the infamous radon gas, a known carcinogen, truly lethal. While we're worried about Fukushima, we're not focusing on that. Couple of terms I want you to understand so we can continue. First of all, the word half-life. We say that uranium has a half-life of 4 billion years. That means, unless we ship it out to outer space, the uranium in the Earth, in the crust of the Earth, the uranium there, if there was a pound of it, in 4 billion years you're going to have half a pound. That means it's not going anywhere. That means it's not going anywhere. Cesium-137. That was one of the radioactive elements in the Fukushima disaster. Cesium-137 has a half-life of about 30 years. That means if you took cesium-137 and you put it on a table and you came back 30 years later, half of it would be left. If you put a pound of it on your table, don't do this, in 30 years you'd have half of it there. Now that half-life and its definition is not applied to the body. So you have to understand that. It does not mean if you put cesium-37 or strontium-90 into your body. For instance, strontium-90 has a half-life of, well, it's kind of debated. It's anywhere from 14 to 600 days to some say 30 years. It's called a biological half-life. A biological half-life is different than a half-life. a biological half-life, maybe we shouldn't even use the term half-life. But a biological half-life means how long is that radioactive element going to stay in your body? And those biological half-lives are much, 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 much less. So cesium-137 is out of your body in about 110 days. Strontium-90 may be in your body, and they debate this, 14 to 600 days. 600 days is a couple of years. And the reason that those biological half-lives, greatest case in point is uranium. Uranium's got a half-life of 4 billion years. Does that mean if you take uranium into the body, it's there for your entire life? No, it doesn't, because that uranium will pass out in infinitely shorter times. Now, the catch is, what happens if those radioactive elements with these very long half-lives get into the body and they complex to, they bind up to some part of your body? For instance, strontium-90, with a relatively short biological half-life. It's argued by many that the biological half-life of strontium-90, meaning the amount of time, half of it will disappear in the body, is as low as 14 days. So what are we worried about? Well, that's the point. What happens if some of that strontium-90, which it will, throws out the calcium in our bone and gets stuffed into the bone where the calcium was? It replaces the calcium. Now the strontium-90 is complexed. And if that complex is stable with the strontium-90, well, now it's not going to get out in 14 days. Maybe it's not going to get out in 600 days. And this is a little catch. There's a difference between a half-life and a biological half-life. The good news is a biological half-life is always infinitely shorter. But that infinitely shorter time can do damage. And that damage is what we have to add up. Again, if you add this up against all the naturally occurring radiation, all the hits we're taking, all really what this radiation does that lots of food chemicals do and lots of stress does and lots of things in the air do, you're taking your concern down very, very, very low. But because we're talking about radiation, let's understand now. It gets in. Cesium-137 from bluefin tuna that you ate, that migrated up through Fukushima, and that came to the Pacific coast, that was caught outside California waters, or close enough to California waters where they fish for bluefin tuna, because it may have bred up near Japan, is now being served in restaurants. And again, if you cook tuna, it doesn't get rid of the radiation. So much of this attention is given to raw fish, sashimi, sushi. Please wake up to this. Please. If you're doing sashimi or sushi, or you're cooking it well done over a grill or in the broiler or baking it, it doesn't make a bit of difference to the amount of radiation. Cesium-137 will withstand that heat. You don't get rid of it. Strontium-90 will withstand that heat. You don't get rid of it by cooking it. So we're talking about seafood. We're not talking about the horror and danger of sushi. Whole other argument. Seafood in general that you've ingested that has strontium-90 and cesium-137, two radioactive elements, which means their nucleuses are decaying at some rate. And as they decay, it emits these protons or these electrons or these protons and neutrons, these different packages of these bombs of decay coming from the nucleus, go into your body, you eat it, it hits the cell, and it starts to break down the cell. Now, the body's got a lot of safeguards to this, and we're going to get into it. I think radiation is one of those things you can do so much about so easily. But I put a picture on the website, straighttalk.cc. I put a picture on the website specifically to give you a good pictorial of really what radiation does better and more lethally and more directly and more unabated than chemicals. What radiation does is it goes through the membrane of the cell, through the cytoplasm of the nucleus, and straight into the DNA, and it breaks the DNA bonds. It can break the DNA bond completely. It can break the DNA bond partially. And if you look at picture number 9, you get a great example of that. You also get a great example of what happens to DNA if you check picture number 20. Gives you a great pictorial on what radiation damage does to the DNA. It can cause a single-stranded break. It can cause a double-stranded break. So the DNA are these sequences of nucleotides in one helical strand bound around another helical strand, and each of those strands are composed of these individual nucleotides, cytosine, guanine, adenine, thymine, uracil, so on and so forth. So whether it's DNA or RNA, you've got these individual strands, and they can be broken in the bonds between the strands, with DNA, that is. You can also have a situation where other types of bonds between these double helical strands in the DNA, those other types of bonds break too. So it doesn't just break the nucleotide sequence or the bonds between the strands. It can break protein cross-linkages. It can create a nucleotide change. It can cause one of the nucleotides to change itself out. So cytosine is replaced by guanine. Or thymine is replaced by adenine. And so the sequence goes off because the nucleotide's replaced. The bond between the helical strands are broken or double broken. Cross linkages are broken. Hydrogen bonds are broken. These bombardments from radioactive elements, cesium-37, strontium-90, in the case of Fukushima, will go into the body, pass through the membrane of the cell, pass through the cytoplasm. These high speed, high frequency bombardments into the DNA. The DNA runs the cell, thus the stress. And the body, although it's evolved many ways to keep bacteria out, viruses out, all sorts of other stresses chemically, the body can handle. The body doesn't know how to handle radiation as well. It knows how to repair it. And what we're coming to here is an understanding of the word oxidative stress or free radical damage. How are these radioactive particles breaking bonds? What they're doing is they're throwing off electrons from the bond. Effectively, they're breaking the bonds by chipping away at the bond. These vital bonds that direct our chemistry within the cell from the DNA on are broken down by the ionizing effect of the radiation. So we designate this radiation as ionizing, whether it's X-ray type or gamma ray type. It's ionizing, which means it can go right through the cell and bust a bond, chip off an electron and break a bond down, and that, of course, is danger to the cell. Now, the point is, lots of things do that. Yes, radiation does it, but everything does it. When we're talking about radiation, we're talking about nothing more than free radical damage to the cell. So the fact that it's radiation doesn't make it any different than if a parasite is eating it. It doesn't make it any different than if someone's protein deficient and they can't make the bond. It doesn't make it any different than if it's chemicals that create these bond changes. Why we have to put radiation in a category all its own and worry about it when it's really no different in the end? In the end, You're looking at, if you're concerned about radiation, the totality of free radical damage to the body. Now, we say oxidative stress. There's a term you've got to understand. I've got a wonderful picture of what we call oxidative stress, or a wonderful link, I should say. If you go to the website, you're going to see a link. And that link, okay, is a whole page explaining or giving you examples of what we mean by oxidative stress that produces free radicals. It means that oxygen species, so compounds in the body that have oxygen, get a electron taken away from the oxygen, and those electron-deficient oxygen compounds run around the body looking to pull an electron from somewhere else. This is what we call a oxygen-free radical. So when we talk about oxidative stress, we're talking about the same thing that cesium-137 or strontium-90 or any radiation issue we're concerned about effectively harbors. Whether you're going to pull a molecule apart with an angry electron deficient atom of oxygen, or you're going to pull an electron, or you're going to pull an electron off, or break a bond down with cesium-137 and gamma ray, amounts to the same thing. That's what you've got to understand. So what? You get hit with radiation that's less than what the Earth by far subjects you to each day. So what against the fact that your body has evolved mechanisms to counter the effect of this free radical damage? And we'll get to what the body does in a moment. So when we say oxidative stress, it's a term that I want you to understand. Oxidative stress is when you've got a hydroxy radical, an oxygen bonded to a hydrogen floating around in the body, and electrons taken away. Check the link out so you can see lists of these oxygen species, these oxygen free radical species that attack the cells of the body because they want to pull an electron off and they inadvertently break a bond down. Oxidative stress is free radical stress. Radiation damage is free radical stress. They are the same thing. So much of that free radical stress from radiation comes off the Earth. A percentage of it will come from man-made radiation. Yes, Fukushima is man-made radiation. A percentage of that man-made radiation or Earth-made radiation accounts for cancer. That's estimated liberally at about 1% of all cancer. So you got to understand how small this contribution is. And when you look at Fukushima, it's smaller than small. It's almost insignificant. And that's why the scientists are saying, relax. I'm the first person to suspect that we're being underestimated here. But sometimes holistic medicine tends to overestimate things. We get conspiratorial. We shouldn't do that. It lowers us. Now, we haven't even gotten to all the things the body can do. What a healthy body will do with radiation, that's off the charts. Number one, all you're doing is making sure that you're going to trap that radiation. If you eat food, and that food has radiation in it. If you eat fish, and that fish, if you eat a banana, and that banana has radioactive potassium in it. That's right. Great book on the site. It's called Naturally Dangerous by James P. Coleman. Naturally Dangerous by James P. Coleman. Great book. Look at that book. We have radioactive potassium. It comes out of the earth. It's in bananas. Bananas are radioactive. There's a percent of the potassium in bananas that breaks down and creates these harmful rays. It's even in bananas. It was in bananas 500 years ago. Get the perspective here. But that radiation, whether it's cesium-137, strontium-90, which will replace the calcium in the bone, irregardless of what it is, if you've got something in the intestine that will pull radiation selectively to itself, you've got a wonderful ally, and we have that. It's called bentonite clay. Bentonite clay is sold in many places if you get a clean grade of bentonite clay. And thanks to Dr. Marshall, of course, we have a clean grade, Premier Research Labs. That calcium bentonite in what we call the dragon clay or the MediClay FX, that bentonite clay, taking it even a capsule a day, a couple of capsules a day, the protection that you get from that to radioactive elements is tremendous. That's hard science. No one will argue that. That's not iffy-wiffy about herbs. It's not iffy-wiffy about all sorts of claims nutraceutical companies play. Bentonite clay is a known absorber. It will pull in radioactive elements. There's number one. If the mucus lining of the intestine is sound, as it should be if you've got a reasonable level of health, if you're defecating normally, you're moving out massive amounts of the minute amounts that you ingest. If your biliary system is open, if you can move what's in the blood, if it even gets to the blood, cesium-137 is going to go out the bile ducts. If it gets to the blood, cesium-137 is going to go out through your urinary system. If cesium-137 tends to bind somewhere, and you're flushing those areas of soft tissue, if you're flushing those areas of fat because you're ingesting the essential fatty acids and you're turning over the fat in the body, if your circulatory system hits the bone marrow, meaning if you've done enough cleansing, enough stretching, enough breath work, enough physical motion, if you even get something like strontium 90 in your bone marrow, promoting a leukemia, promoting a lymphoma, if you even get it there, the fat flushing in the bone marrow, if your body has trained itself to that point, is going to take these things which have low half-lives in the body. They're going to come out in a year or two. They're going to come out sometimes in 2 weeks. They're going to come out, and they're going to come out faster if, in fact, your body's excretory systems are open, if you're binding it up with clay. Now, what you're left with then is the free radical damage that these radioactive isotopes are going to cause in your body. That free radical damage is no different than a hydroxy radical of an oxygen species that you derived from some chemical that you ate that you shouldn't have eaten. We say MSG and the like are neurotoxins. Those neurotoxins are often oxygen radicals looking to pull electrons and break bonds. They're going to cause oxidative stress. Oxidative stress is a specific type of free radical stress. The same free radical stress occurs when you eat fish that's got strontium 90 in it. So what do we call to the body in the end when finally the intestines didn't catch it, the bile ducts didn't take it out, the urinary system didn't take it out, and that radioactive isotope has had no alternative but to bind into the calcium or the bone, the cortical bone, or the bone marrow. What does the body do to counter that free radical stress? And you know the answer. It delivers its load of antioxidants. It delivers its load of that which counters the free radical stress. Intracellular glutathione. If a free radical attacks a cell structure and pulls an electron away, intracellular, the glutathione that the cell makes is there to repair it. It's what your cell makes. It's the CoQ10 that your cell makes. It's the lipoic acid that your cell makes. I'm not even talking about outside influences. If you want to ingest outside influences, curcumin in turmeric, the polyphenols in green tea, your vitamin C's, your vitamin E's from good sources, the vitamin E's and vitamin C's in your foods. Your body, herbs included, will throw massive amounts of antioxidant protection or free radical reversal. For the little bit of strontium 90 that gets through the other guards, the guarding of the intestine, make no mistake about it. If you're defecating, if your bile ducts are open, if your kidney's filtration rate is up high, if you haven't basically oxidized or free radical damaged the filtration systems in your kidney or plugged it up with uric acid crystals or calcium phosphate crystals or calcium oxalate crystals, if your bile ducts are not plugged with mucus and infections, by the time your body has thrown the full weight of its attack against what we're concerned about with Fukushima and the like, the myriad of antioxidants that you ingest through food or otherwise counter it beautifully. And there's not a lot to be concerned about then, is there, if you're taking care of yourself? The problem, of course, is, does the bile flow? Has the kidney been flushed? Have we scraped the mucoid garbage off the inside of the intestines such that the mucus layer is repleting itself so it can trap radioactive element before it recirculates back into the blood? Are we indulging in the pleasures of a good bentonite clay? Are we taking in the antioxidants even if the foods we eat don't have them? Vitamin C's, the vitamin E's, the turmerics, the green teas. In the literature, we have testimony to groups in the Japanese community circa World War II that suffered through the atomic bomb. Hiroshima, Nagasaki, where two extremely high concentrations, of course, there was great suffering and radiation damage, cancers, leukemias, lymphomas. And statistically speaking, the incidence of cancers for quite a while in the gut of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, those incidences were much higher than the normal population. And yet, within those communities, there were groups whose incidence of cancer was lower than the rest of Japan, if not the rest of the world. And those groups were indulging liberally in green tea. Now, green tea's been studied. The polyphenols have been studied. The polyphenols are potent anti-radiation chemicals. In other words, they have a specialized way, not relevant to explanation here. They have a specialized way of countering the type of damage that comes from radioactive particles bombarding your cell. So your body's got choices, enormous numbers of choices. Honestly, in the full span of it, I wouldn't think so much about cell phone damages, and I wouldn't think so much about isotopes from fish. I wouldn't think so much about the incidences that we put our fingers on. I would think more in terms of how to move the radiation that you're inevitably going to be subjected to out of your body. And this comes down to two really important facts here. The other one, those two important facts are where your home is and the use of external clays. To me, the future of health, the future of health is for the homeowner. The future of health is for the business owner to start offering people places where you can use the best, cleanest clays that money can buy. Premier's black magma clays on the hands, on the feet. Not necessarily for scars, but devoted more specifically to pulling out, okay, the chemicals and thus the free radicals and the radioactive elements that inevitably you're going to be subjected to, whether it's the non-ionizing cell phones, the non-ionizing EMF from jets, or the highly ionizing radiation from CT scans and from X-rays and from the gamma rays that just hit us naturally. The use of the clays on fertile, eco-protected, energetic lands to the point where the nervous system can respond is really something to think about. And that's what I will leave you with today. I will leave you with the notion that if you really want to take a step against the horrors of radiation and the increasing concentration of hits from incidences like Fukushima, find clean land, take good clays, massage them into your tissues, your hands, your feet, as much of it as your body can profit from, and put your hands and feet in the good green soil, the good green earth. Sweat 30 minutes and refresh yourself and feel the nervous system shift into the parasympathetic state. Against that ritual, Fukushima, cell phones, radiation from jets, against those things, that exercise will and should put you at rest. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.